Hey, pimps and hoes, it's the Ace Man here from my good buddies over at AdamandEve.com. Now, they got, well, I'm not Jewish, but you know the Wheeze is, Hillbilly Jew. They got what they call such a deal for you people. You go to AdamandEve.com, you can get 50% off everything they have over there, plus 3 free adult films. And when you go to AdamandEve.com, you just punch in Ace and you get the 3 free adult films. Plus, again, half off everything they have under their super erotic umbrella. So, what do? Go to AdamandEve.com and tell them Ace sent you. Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Welcome back to the podcast, James Gunn. James, good to see you, brother.
Hey, it's good to see you, man.
Last time we were in here, well, now, James does PG Porn, which is on Spike TV. You can go online and check it out. We can check out a ton of stuff with James online. James is I started with Trauma. It is Trauma.
It's Trauma, yeah.
Trauma Entertainment.
Supposedly it means excellence in celluloid in Latin.
Oh, really?
What the founder of Trauma claims, Lloyd Kaufman.
But Toxic Avengers.
Toxic Avengers.
Claim to fame.
Yeah, that's
Trauma,
that's
right?
A big claim to fame, which they're remaking now in the big Hollywood way.
And writes screenplays. You're a writer, you're a director, you make sure.
I like to think of myself as a Renaissance man.
Yeah.
I like to think of myself as not being able to choose what I want to do. No, I basically think of myself as a film director.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was always working towards. You know, I've directed one feature film. I'm in the midst of directing another movie, Super.
Which stars?
That stars Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page and Liv Tyler. And, we're in pre-production on that right now and going to start shooting in the end of November and December.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess if you ask me what I think of myself as, it would be that.
And what about Pets with Ben Stiller?
I left that project.
You left it?
Yeah.
After they asked you to leave?
No, after I asked myself. I had a...
Falling
an
out?
An issue. Yeah.
An issue? With
I had
Ben?
An issue. Not with Ben. Ben was great, actually.
Ben's great.
I never had a problem with Ben Stiller. But there's an issue with, you know, it's what happens when you're working on these big A-list Hollywood films where you have the studio that wants one thing, then you have the finance people that want another thing, then you have the producers who want another thing. And I got stuck in between all of this shit, and I just felt like I wasn't making the movie that I really went in there to make. So at a certain point, I'm like, I don't want to put up with this.
I wish more people in the entertainment industry, meaning more the money people, would just take on the approach that a lot of NFL team owners do, which is if you're Robert Kraft, you just go hire Belichick and then you get the fuck out of the way because he knows how to play football and he knows how to coach football. And you know how to make money, and you know how to wear collars, shirts with white cuffs and white collars on a blue base.
Yeah.
And you just sit up and get drunk and get rich in your owner's box, but don't go down on the fucking field and tell Belichick how to do it. And it's insane,
yeah.
Whether it be TV or features, especially in comedy, people that have never laced up a pair of cleats in their entire life are saying, here's how you run an out pattern, son. And yeah. You're like, you're fat, you didn't make the JV team in high school. How are you telling me what's funny?
I would agree to a point. I think that there is in Hollywood, you know, you have these, you need to have producers that counterbalance directors to some way. Because if you just trust a director 100%, sometimes that's necessary. That's why people make lower budget movies. That's one of the reasons why I'm making Super for a lower budget than I would make a Hollywood movie, is so that I have freedom. But even there, I have a producer by the name of Ted Hope, who's a guy who's done The Savages and, you know, Hal Hartley's movies and, Ang Lee's movies. And he's a guy to, like, balance things with. We have a back and forth where we discuss and he balances me out.
Yeah.
But when you have, these big Hollywood movies have so many people that are trying to justify their jobs by making whatever they believe a part of that film.
Yes.
The movie becomes nothing. It doesn't become one person's vision. It doesn't even become a studio's vision. It becomes a vision of a million different people and becomes nothing.
Yes.
And that's the kind of movie that I just, it doesn't turn me on.
Well, also, what art historically ever turned out worth a shit where five people stood behind the artist and told him what to do with every brush stroke?
Yeah.
I mean, does it ever, you know, whoever commissioned whatever the painting was, the king or the treasurer or the royal this or that, if all five of them just literally stood behind the person while he was Da Vinci or whoever, Van Gogh, while he was painting, would it turn out any better?
Well, basically, that's almost every TV. Almost every TV show is like that. I mean, that's almost every TV show. I've had so many friends.
Myself.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the experience I just had with CBS, and then we'll talk about all your meaningless projects.
Let's hear about the important stuff first.
But let's talk about me.
I came here for.
Donnie, what do you want?
I'm going to turn the air conditioner on. I want to give you a heads up. We're cooking in here.
It's gaming that room. That's fine. Okay. Let me tell you about the experience that I had, and then I will give an example and tell you exactly how it went. Okay, me and my writing partner wrote a traditional four-camera sitcom for me. Now, CBS said, we want you to do a sitcom. And the first thing out of my mouth was, let's do something different. Let's do Curb Your Enthusiasm, basically, but with a more likable fella instead of Larry David. And everyone said, no. Four cameras. Four camera means traditional audience, shoot it on Wednesday night, audience warm-up guy, the whole bit. You know, regular sitcom. And I thought, I don't know. It sounds too traditional. I don't know if that's my place. And they said, trust me, this is where the money is. This is what you should do.
And if there's anybody you can trust, it's a
network
TV executive.
So here's how the process works. My partner and I wrote the script, just basically us with a little bit of input from a couple people, but not really. We just went off and wrote it. And when we wrote the script, CBS bought it just based on the strength of the script. And I know it sounds like I'm blowing air up my own tukai here, but ran into a couple of Hollywood types at a couple of parties down the road, and they said, hey, you guys had the hot sitcom script of last sitcom season. So everyone, the scripts make the rounds, people read them, and they'll sort of declare this is the hot one. So obviously it was a really good script. Everyone loved it. CBS wanted to do it. ABC wanted to do it. Fox wanted to do it. Like, we had everyone wanted to do it, and everyone who read it loved it. This was the hot script. Fine. So we went with CBS. Then, over the course of the next 2 months, we sat in a room with a writer's assistant and a showrunner and took all the network notes, took all the CBSer notes, took all the producing notes. Everybody weighed in. And we basically sat there for 2 months and proceeded to make the script a little bit worse than what it was
and
2 months ago.
And you as an artist get brainwashed by the end of that, where you kind of think that maybe it's okay.
Somebody knows what they're talking
about. Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. I'm a humble carpenter from North Hollywood. I don't know what losing C-story arc momentum means.
Yeah, I got you.
So I heard losing story momentum, and what about the arc of the C-story, and we're losing B-story momentum so many times that I just got brainwashed, like an attorney talking to you in a language you can't understand. So we essentially sat in a room for 2 months while a committee of people who weren't very funny made what was a very funny script a little less funny. They didn't ruin it. They just made it not as good as what it was 2 months ago when we were done. But there was one part of the script. There was one part of the script that involved me driving in a car, doing my rants, doing my thing. And that's the one part they didn't get to. And the reason they didn't get to it is because it was going to be improvised, and it was a bunch of beats. And what we were going to do is I was playing a driving instructor, and I was just going to sit in the car and drive, and we're going to get a green screen, a car, four or five actors, move them in and out of the car.
I was going to do what I do. I'll do my Jags. We'll whack it in. We'll have 20 little interstitials that are about a minute long, and we'll be able to place them throughout the show, coming in, coming out of break, whatever. Okay, that's the one part where they never really fucked with us, because we kind of shined them on. Like, they were like, what's going on with the driving stuff? And we'd put, like, placeholders in the script and say, you know, that's all beats. Adam improvises a lot of that. We don't even know if we're going to use it. And they'd go back to B story arc, you know, and we get them off it. Well, when the dust settled, the best part of the show, by far, through audience testing and through just everyone who saw the pilot, was, of course, the stuff with me in the car. The stuff they didn't fuck with. The stuff they didn't get their unfunny paws
right.
on.
Yeah. But
easily turned out to be the funniest thing. And as I was saying to writer's assistant, isn't it ironic that the part we spent the least amount of time on, and we sat for the car in the car for about an hour and a half and spent almost no time, the part we spent the least amount of time on and the part they had none of their stink on, if you watch the pilot, easily is the funniest part of the pilot. Is this just a coincidence? And then I said, I'm saying this to the writer's assistant. He said, well, wait a minute. They did have some input in that. And I said, oh, yes. They forced us to hire one Latina actress that we didn't want to hire, and she was horrible. So they're one fucking little piece of input into the one thing that turned out clearly the best of the whole pilot was a horrible casting decision that they rammed up our ass.
Yeah.
That's how the process goes. So when we were done, we had a funny, pretty good pilot. And the funniest part was the part they didn't get to. You almost have to lie to them. Like, we essentially lied and said, we got this handled. We're only going to shoot for a couple hours. We got a bunch of different beats. It'll be fine. And they left us alone, and that part turned out the best.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you're dealing with.
That's what happens constantly. And that's why, you know, there are people out there who think I'm a little bit of a... difficult to work with, shall we say. But I don't really, I don't feel like that with my crew, with my actors, with anybody else. But it's like you have to fight constantly to get across what you want to get across.
Right.
And it becomes a real pain in the ass. This, the thing that, so we have this new show people can go watch it at jamesgunn.com called Human Z.
Mm-hmm.
It's a web show. And what happened with Human Z was originally about a year ago, Xbox came to me and they said, hey, you know, we're looking for young guys to come in and create new content for Xbox, actual entertainment programming for Xbox, our first programming ever. And I said,
so you would use your Xbox like a DVD player.
At that point already, yes, already a lot of Xbox is making a lot of money by people downloading episodes of South Park and things like that mm-hmm. onto the Xbox.
I see.
So people are watching movies. So they wanted to start basically become a network and create their own content.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to us and they said, you know, we'd like you to create something. And I said, hey, I have an idea. Why don't we do this thing where we have different horror... I've been talking to Rob Zombie. I've been talking to James Wan, who directed Saw. These guys feel like they're trapped in doing horror movies, and they'd like to do something else.
I talked to Rob's mom, Eunice Zombie.
Yeah.
A delight, by the way. A delightful woman. Yeah. You would never guess that Eunice was in any way... I mean, the zombies are a great family, but you would never guess that Eunice was Rob's mother. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, that's right. And so these guys wanted to do other kinds of content besides horror movies. Mm-hmm. And I said, why don't we do something where a bunch of horror movie directors get together, create comedy shorts for Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
The head of Xbox was like, this is great. We'll do it. We're not going to give you very much money. We'll give you $10,000 an episode, but you can do whatever you want.
Right.
So we say, okay,
there's no FCC involved with Xbox
Nothing.
And there's no... Is there a big corporate, whatever? They're not owned by Pepsi or anything, are they?
Well, they're owned by Microsoft.
Oh,
so happens. So what happens is we signed a contract with Xbox, and basically the contract said all they need to okay is a script. As long as they okay the script, everything else is okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a script called The 700s. The 700s was about two guys who were standing in line at the world's biggest gangbang, and they have a conversation about their lives. Now, we hear some sex in the background, but it's basically, it's a touching, meaningful story about two guys standing in line and their dreams, of achieving their dreams.
Uh-huh. Funny idea.
Xbox okayed this thing, and I started casting it. We found a location. We hired a location. Then all of a sudden, Xbox comes back to me and says, oh, no, you can't do that because... It's the advertisers, the guys who sell the advertising read it and flipped out.
So, first off, they always do flipped out. This, they lie.
I've already done. I've put a lot of work into this. I'm pissed off.
But they didn't flip out. They just went, I'm not sure. I don't think. I don't know.
Probably.
Really,
exactly.
Right. They always say, whoever
flip out.
Tells
Everything's
you
always flip
says
out.
Flipped
flip out.
Out.
That
so
means
you don't
it's
argue with
serious.
Them. Yeah, I know.
So I decided, okay, I'll write something else. And I wanted to write something insidiously awful. And so I wrote Human Z, which is the story of me sending my sperm in a turkey baster to a secret laboratory in Bratislava. They stick it up a chimpanzee's snatch and send my Human Z son back to me in a box, who we then mistreat and use for all sorts of negative purposes.
Sure.
Anyway, so I wrote this. They okayed that. We went out and shot it. All these other guys, James Wan went out and shot his show. Adam Green went out and shot his show. They all shot these shows. Then we turn them in, and they really do flip the fuck out.
Right.
Because at this point, now they think everything's too offensive, everything's too dirty, everything can't be that. They had to cut out all the sex scenes. They have to cut out all the negative words, all the curses. And Xbox flips out. And little by little, we just get, you know, so then I take Human Z back, and now it's mine, and now you can watch it on JamesGunn.com.
It always, well, so they paid for you to do Human Z.
They paid for it,
even if it was just a relative pittance.
Yes.
I know everyone wants to be hip. They want to be edgy. They want to be now. They want to get a viral buzz going. They want the kids to get into it. And then you show it to them, and they're like, "Oh, no."
Yeah,
this can't. This
and
can't
what
be.
Happened with Xbox is, you know, in the defense of the guys running Xbox, I think they thought they had more power than they did because all it takes is one little Microsoft exec to look at that stuff and say, "Hey, wait a second, Xbox really only makes this much money per year." Versus everything else, if our stockholders see Human Z and a woman getting her head torn off, they're going to flip the fuck out, and they put the kibosh on the whole thing.
Meanwhile, no one ever does. I mean, somebody writes one shitty letter, and that's about it.
Yes, no one freaks out.
The gangbang thing is some... I like your gangbang idea.
Yeah. I still want to shoot it. I like that. That's one of my favorite
scripts.
Because
it's true. You don't have to show any sex or any nudity.
No.
You just shoot the guys from the waist up, and you have that slight hand movement they use. it's a repetitive thing. There's a difference between... I always say this. The difference between beating off and... In just keeping your wood is the difference between jogging and then running in place at the red light. That's when you see the guys doing the gangbang stuff. Yeah, it's like I like the casual. I'm not beating off.
Right.
I'm staying chubbed up.
Also, they don't think about it. They're not. Yeah. They're totally thinking and having a conversation about something else while playing with themselves. That's what the guys on porn sets do too. It's like it's become an automatic. The other thing that really freaks me out about, if you ever watch, I watched some. I'm not a gangbang guy. That's not my thing. I don't find that very appealing.
No.
But I did watch some gangbang videos to sort of gear up for this short.
It's a fucking ride along, De Niro would do if he was going to play undercover cop.
But the thing that freaks... I don't know if I'm freaked out
by the
guys wearing the masks.
Oh, they're guys wearing masks?
Oh, yeah. You got guys wearing gorilla masks because they don't want to be seen in the video.
Oh, really?
Or a chicken mask or something like... They're
At
all
least
sorts
go
of...
Mexican wrestler.
Mexican wrestler might be something, but I don't know if I'm more freaked out by the guys wearing masks or by the guys not wearing masks. I mean, who the fuck wants to not wear a mask when you're one of 500 guys? I don't know. I don't know which is just more disturbing.
It's weird, too, because, like, first off, what is the guy, the CEO of Nabisco? And this would be very damaging to his family, and the Dow would bottom out if anyone... Like these guys have...
Have any life.
Have any
life whatsoever. I mean, listen, they're... And not only are they one of 500 guys fucking the same women, but if you ever see the women that are the particular porn stars in these gangbang videos, they're always the bottom of the barrel. It's like Jenna Jameson is getting fucked by 500 guys.
No.
It's not somebody who is worth standing in line to fuck.
Maybe they're wearing masks because they're family members. That would be a very tough realization.
Because it's her father?
Brother.
Brother? Okay, that might be...
Cousin. I got to tell
you... Then I understand it.
I can tell you, any guy wearing a mask at a gangbang, you better hope my buddy Ray doesn't show up to one of these gangbangs, because he will defrock your ass of that mask in 1 second. Like, he will pull... He would take great delight in pulling that chimp mask off that guy's head while he was balls deep in that bottom barrel type porn star.
That'd be perfect.
I just like, I don't know, like, you know, I'm not one of these guys who would camp out for, like, Bruce Springsteen tickets.
Yeah.
But if I was doing one of those gangbang, hey, she's going to set the record,
yeah,
I would pitch a tent on the sidewalk. I would get there early.
Yeah, you know, you want to be first in.
That would be definitely one. I would definitely get up in there.
One of the saddest sights is the woman when she's on like the 300th dude, and you know there's still a couple hundred guys left.
Yeah,
but she already is like, I mean, she was phoning it in to begin with, but now she's phoning it in with that sort of weary, sad look in her eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the weird thing is, I think the guys who watch gangbang videos, that's actually what they like.
That's what they like.
They like the fact
they
that...
They probably fast forward through the first 400
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, they like the weary, cum-splattered, like, sick-looking, you know, dying deer look of the porn star.
Yeah.
That's the,
yeah,
you know,
sad.
You just hit her by your car, with your car.
Sad. Sad. Yeah, you know, maybe later on, I mean, I imagine... These things will all be markers for, like, serial killers. Like, all we really have now is tortured bugs when they were young.
Yeah,
you,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
One,
we do that marker thing where it's like he tortured little animals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now we'll just be able to grab your computer.
Yeah.
And it'll be pretty easy. We'll just see what it is you were into. And I bet you this will be toward the top of the list.
It's definitely not a good sign for someone's mental health.
No.
But I don't know. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Whatever.
We
people
can't
are in,
judge.
I heard a story. This has nothing to do with anything, but I thought you might be interested in this. Because last time I remember we were talking about piss freaks and pony play and the furries and all of that.
It doesn't take long.
And so I heard... I heard my friend sent me a medical journal report from, you know, like the 70s or something like that, of a young couple who were in love and they didn't know anything about sex. And I guess the woman's hymen was kind of strong, and so they had never had intercourse, and they couldn't exactly figure out what intercourse was. So he fucked her urethra.
Ooh.
For years.
For years?
Yeah. For years.
Hold on.
And she was, you know, shockingly, she started having some sort of bladder difficulties. And she had to go in, and the doctor was saying, you're doing
great
something
commentary.
Incorrect.
I mean, that's,
somebody wasn't taught sex ed very well.
Well, not only that, but you ain't hung like a paint can if you're penetrating someone's urethra.
Also, evolution is doing its job right there. Evolution is definitely doing its job, keeping you out of the gene pool.
I am all for
that's like a man
getting pregnant when you're
a
that
man
dumb.
Sticking his dick up your dick. That's the essential same thing as that.
You know what? Don't knock it until you try it, James. that's what I want to say. About
is that one
that.
Of your things?
You know what? It's not one of my things, but it's on my list of things. You know what I mean? I
have things to do. Your bucket list. That's on your bucket list.
Yeah, it starts with an F. Yeah.
I know. I didn't see that Morgan Freeman movie, The Bucket List, but I heard that that was sort of the finale. That's a shock ending, is that he wants to stick his dick up the other guy's dick. Is that what happens?
If you get the box set, you see the deleted scenes, and it's right there.
Yeah, they ruined the movie.
Well, I will say, you know, the thing about all the bucket list movies. The thing that's always wrong with all those, like, you have 6 months to live, so the guy's like, well, I want to get into the MMA. It's like, no, when you have 6 months to live, your body's riddled with cancer, you're breathing through a tube, you can barely sit up. In movies, it's like you have 6 months to live as if you were a perfectly healthy 29-year-old and someone's going to shoot you in 6 months.
Yeah.
It's not your body's riddled with AIDS.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to do if I have 6 months to live? I'm going to kill my enemies. That's what I think I might do.
Right.
I'm going to go out and shoot everyone I hate.
You skydiving is not going to it's not going to last and have the lasting effects of you snuffing out a few of your enemies.
That's right.
Nearly.
Make the world a better place before
You're going to walk into Xbox with like a bandit, like Columbine. Like kick open the door over at Microsoft with like the crazy bandolero belt on, wearing the gorilla mask from the gangbang movies, you know, just to protect your
family. Just to be clear, you're suggesting this to the audience right now.
I'm just saying. It's actually preventing you from doing it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. So now, what's next? So we have Human Z.
We have Human Z. Yeah, people can go watch that at jamesgunn.com. That's just started yesterday. It's offensive. It's
and why did you... No, let's see. Oh, pets. Yes. There was a difference, a creative difference with you and the man on...
Me and three or four other people. It was just... It was going around in circles. It was right. Like I would do one draft to please this group of people, and they would be happy. And the other group would be unhappy, and it was just, it was a nightmare.
I find, or have found in my travels, that people usually don't argue with you about funny because they're not funny and they're not qualified to argue about funny. They argue about story all the time.
They argue about story,
and it's really hard to say to somebody when they said, "This wasn't tracking for me." You can't go, "Yes, it was," or you can't go, "That's because you're a fucking imbecile." You just go, "What can you do?" Like, people go, "I was confused. I didn't get this storyline. Like, I didn't understand it." And you can't go, "No, you weren't."
Yeah. I used to, when I first started writing screenplays for studios, so I've been doing this for 11 years, writing for studios for 11 years. I had something that really stood in my way, which was being honest. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've learned to lie. So I just pretend like I'm listening to everything they have to say, agreeing to everything they have to say, and then I go do what I want.
Yeah. I had we used to have one of the funniest things ever, which is Jimmy and I wrote a movie called Kill Gallagher. And it was about, I'll be fast with it.
Gallagher, the watermelon comedian.
The comedian. This is 10 years ago. I was doing Loveline with Dr. Drew. The band Dishwalla came on. I said, where'd you get the name Dishwalla? He said it's what they call the guys who bring the satellite dishes to the impoverished villages. And Dr. Drew, in one of the only moments where he's ever actually said anything funny or even remotely clever, said, "Imagine you get your dish set up in your impoverished village, and you turn on Comedy Central, and there's Gallagher smashing watermelons," and, you know, cut to scorched earth, dry fields, you know, you've had a 7-year drought, and this guy's holding a giant watermelon above his head, and all the villagers have gathered around the TV set, and they're like, "Oh," and then he pulls out the sledge-o-matic and mashes it, and they're all outraged, and they've decided that this guy's sort of the Antichrist, like, they're superstitious people. And
he's directly mocking them. Is that what
he's not only mocking them, but the reason they haven't had a drop of rain in 7 years is because of this man.
Right.
Like, he needs to be stopped. So they get the 19-year-old village idiot, load him up with whatever possessions they have, and send him to America to kill Gallagher. Well, as we were pitching this story to a lot of, you know, studio folks 10 years ago, mind you, they would say, "Well, here's the problem. Nobody knows who Gallagher is." And this is 10 years ago. I mean, Gallagher's been off the scene for 10 years. But 10 years ago, he wasn't off the scene for 10 years.
He was off the scene enough where he was funny.
I was like, "What do you mean? No one?" First off, Gallagher, sad to say, highest grossing comedian of the 80s.
Really?
Highest grossing.
Over Andrew Dice Clay?
Over everybody. Yeah, you can look it up.
Yeah,
but I remember, Andrew Dice Clay was huge in the 80s, but let's be clear. Andrew Dice Clay was huge from like 87 to like 91 or something. But Gallagher was doing his shit in 81, 82, 83,
true.
So he had the entire decade
of
the 80s.
I myself don't find Gallagher so funny, but I do find Gallagher 2 hilarious.
His brother?
I think he took the Gallagher thing and kind of did it better.
So this guy, we start having these meetings and people are like, "Nah, that's a funny idea for a movie, except for no one's going to know who Gallagher is." And I was like, what do you mean no one's going to know who Gallagher is? And then I would start, at a certain point, I started just becoming a dick. And one guy, I remember very clearly, I said, "Listen, you don't know who Gallagher is. First of all, if you're running the comedy division for Paramount or whatever, and you've never heard of the highest grossing fucking comedian
so
from..."
So he actually never heard of it. It wasn't only that he assumed that other people hadn't heard of Gallagher.
Some of the guys would assume others hadn't heard, and other guys hadn't heard. And he'd give me the no one knows who Gallagher is. And one guy said, I was at my saturation level with stupid assholes. I just said, look, if you want, we can go walk out to the guard shack right now. Me and you will walk out to the guard shack and we'll ask the guy who's standing there with the GED wearing the ill-fitting uniform if he's heard of Gallagher or not. And he will say yes, and then you'll feel like an asshole. Do you want to go walk down to the guard shack and talk to the guy? And oh, we don't need to do that to prove. I think I know, and blah, blah, blah. But yes, Gallagher, and Google it, everybody. I think highest grossing comedian, sadly. I mean, it's a really...
there he is. There's his picture of him.
Yeah,
right,
he will... you know, the saddest the highest grossing comedian in the 90s is probably Carrot Top or something like that. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I remember... I just know that one time my friend was doing a movie with Steve Martin, and Steve Martin said, you know who was the big... You know, he was like, who was the biggest ever? Right. And Steve Martin said, yeah, he was... You know, Steve Martin was really huge in the late 70s. And you know, Eddie Murphy, of course, was really huge, I guess, in the late 80s.
Right.
But supposedly, Andrew Dice Clay, in terms of actual his audience size, dwarfed any other comedian ever.
He would, you know, he'd do Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Which is what makes it sad now when he's still walking around in the leather jacket.
Oh, yeah.
Hickory dickory. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, all right, already.
And sometimes now he sort of seems to give up halfway through his shtick. He just seems to, like, start it out, and then he's like, fuck it. I just...
Hickory dickory. Oh, I got to kill myself.
like...
I can't even light the cigarette I'm holding
on. You know, they're like, you know, eight reality shows, all of which have bombed. He's like...
I know, but look.
He was the first one kicked off of Celebrity Apprentice. That's the only thing I know about that show.
I know.
there he is.
So sad. So very sad.
Yeah, and also he used to be kind of a, I wouldn't say a good looking guy, but he was fit and he was, you know, he fit that persona. And now he's like wearing the leather jacket and he's fat. And
well, this is the whole thing. This is why you need to be funny. Because if you're funny, you can just get fat and turn into somebody else. You know what I mean? You can just be Rob Reiner. One minute you're Meathead, the next minute you're in Spinal Tap, the next minute you're just a fat bald guy who directs funny movies, you know, and everyone leaves you alone. If you're Andrew Dice Clay and you've caught lightning in a bottle, but maybe you're not that funny.
Yeah.
You just caught lightning in a bottle.
That worked for a minute.
Now you have to keep with the leather jacket and the thing. Meanwhile, your hair's falling out, you get bellies, you know. Basically, the hair's leaving and the belly's coming. You know what I mean? Like, hair gone, exit hair, enter gut.
Yeah, I felt a little bit like I had to work with this. There's going to be plenty of fans that will not like this because they're considered such a great band. But Lemmy from Motorhead.
I
had to work on him.
Does he smell?
He smells. And,
does he smell?
And when you get up close to him, he looks like a grandpa wearing a Halloween costume.
Right.
A Halloween rock and roll costume, and it just gets kind of pathetic. And
he smells so bad.
He went out to a strip club while we were shooting, and he got a lap dance.
Oh,
and he comes running over to I won't say his name, but he comes running over to my friend, and he's got his hand over his mouth, and he's going, we gotta go now. And it seems like during the lap dance, his false teeth fell out of his mouth, and he had to run home to get away from the strip club. And I'm like, that's what this guy's life has come to.
Yeah, he kind of looks like if Robert Shaw had decided to rock instead of act. That's kind of what Lemmy would look like.
Yeah.
But Lemmy, I would like to put him up against George Clinton in the stink department. And see.
Does George Clinton stink quite a... That doesn't shock me at all.
No, I mean, you know how...
You would imagine.
You can see people from inside your air-conditioned car and go, I know that guy stinks.
Yeah, if somebody photoshopped a few flies buzzing around his head, it would just sort of fit in.
You wouldn't think they were photoshopped.
You would just think they were flies.
George Clinton, the first marker for stink is size. When you see a big guy, usually you add a couple of points. Yeah, well, what I hobo power is what I've decided
hobo
to call
power.
It. We haven't gotten to this in a long time, but
Wow, you're right on.
You guys are
There's
good.
A picture
yeah.
of Robert Shaw, who happens to be my my brother-in-law's uncle.
Great actor, by the way.
Robert Shaw next to Lemmy, and they really do look, you know, almost, they're definitely, they're twin brothers.
That picture of Lemmy doesn't look as much like Robert Shaw as
Lemmy does.
As Lemmy
yeah,
does.
That picture yeah. of Lemmy actually looks better than Lemmy looks
yeah,
in
you gotta
real
find
life.
A better picture of yeah. Lemmy. But, yeah, Motorhead's one of those bands that no one I know has ever heard or bought a CD of, but everyone just goes, oh, yeah, they rock. Yeah,
yeah they
rock.
Pretend that they're cool right. because they're, you know, they're...
Motorhead and Radiohead, actually, the two bands that have the head at the end are the two bands that I don't know anyone who sits down and listens to them, but they just sign off. Oh yeah, great band, awesome.
Yeah, I do
I'm
know
into
some
them.
People
I'm
that sign off on Radiohead. I mean, I'll actually listen to Radiohead.
It makes you. It's cool. Like if someone just says, "Who are you into? Motorhead, Radiohead?" They'd go, "Oh man, you know music."
Yeah, Motorhead is one of those bands that people just automatically agree is like they're the only cool metal band or
right.
whatever. You know,
right.
it's just like they're cool. And yeah. all the other, you know, I hate all metal except for, you know, it's like yeah. Steve Earle and country. I hate all country
right.
except Steve Earle. Steve Earle is cool.
Meanwhile, I don't know anyone who has a Motorhead CD. They just go, yeah. oh, yeah, Motorhead. Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want any trouble.
Well, it's because you listen to one Motorhead song and then you've kind of heard Motorhead. It's
well,
you may
you,
like that
I,
one
ever
song.
Ever since
but...
I smelt Lemmy, I just couldn't get past it. I mean, the man just has a, I mean, well, you know what he smells like. But listen. George Clinton is he's got the dreads, he's got the size, he's got the beard, he's got the funk, and I mean, it's just one of the smelliest guys you'll ever meet. But Lemmy, pound for pound, may be one of the smelliest guys.
Wow.
You know, he may be. You know, it's hard to stink at
yeah,
160
I've been around
pounds.
Lemmy quite a bit. He's quite smelly, and I still like the guy, so I don't care. You know, he's all right, I guess, but
yeah,
I don't like
no,
him.
I don't have any problem with him.
I have a problem with him.
You do.
I do. I have.
Why?
I don't
What's
like
the
him.
Problem?
He was on my. He was on my. He was the only pain in the ass. My first movie I ever made was a movie called Romeo and Juliet. And he was the only pain in the ass on the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was a pain in the ass, and he came in and he wanted to. One of the things that happened was he came in and he rewrote all his dialogue for the beginning of the movie. And because he was Lemmy, and we didn't have anybody who was even
right.
mildly famous
right.
in the movie. People were like, you know, the Lloyd Kaufman was like, okay, yeah, let's you know, we'll do whatever
this
you
is
want.
When you were doing Troma.
When I was doing Troma.
Right.
So we went out, and I didn't want my words rewritten, and he had forgotten all his dialogue when we started shooting. So we're like, we need to make cue cards. So I went to the cue card guy, and I said, just write the old dialogue, which
right.
he did, and then he recited the actual movie, but he thought he had rewritten the dialogue
right.
for the film.
Is there nothing worse than a pain in the ass actor?
Well, it's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I mean, there's different types of pains in the asses. Like, a lot of actors are like, and I'm saying, I give actors a little bit of really good actors who are really doing their thing. They are throwing their emotions out there. They're dealing with this stuff. And so it makes them a little bit raw at sometimes. So you have to have some semblance of understanding of creating a space for them where they can act and deal with all that stuff. And then there's the guys that take it, you know, four or five steps too far.
You know, my feeling, because we do a lot of this stuff where everything's subjective and, you know, well, it's your opinion versus my opinion. And I really don't buy that creatively. I really do feel like there is a right and a wrong and an up and a down and a right and a left and a black and a white in comedy, in drama, in almost any form of creativity. And I think if two people, and I've had this happen a million times, where you sit down with somebody, they have to have a brain, but you say, I don't see it this way. I see it this way. And I think it would make more sense to try it this way. And they say, here's why I want to do it my way. And I'll go, okay, that makes sense. Okay, I didn't see it that way, but now I understand what it is, and I'll do it that way. Or they'll be wrong,
yeah.
and I'll be right. But either way, it's not a, well, we'll just agree to disagree, or you see it your way, and I'll see it my way. It's usually not that. There usually is a way. And there's one way, and that's the funny way, or that's the provocative way, or that's
there's a
the
way
whatever
that works
way.
Better. You
there
know,
is.
Like I like to think of it as how it works. How does it work in an overall context? How does it work on set? How does it work in the movie itself?
I completely
what works
agree.
The best.
And we do in our society, especially, and we don't do it in any other. It's the only thing I miss about carpentry. You know, in carpentry, when you hang a door and a door jam, you would plumb and you would plumb up the side that the hinges were on. Mm-hmm. And you'd put some shims behind it, and you'd put the hinges in it, and you'd pop a few nails in it, and you would get that all plumb and level on the hinge side. But you would leave the top part of the jam and the other part, which is called the strike part, where the doorknob is and the catch gun, you'd leave that loose, and you'd swing the door, and you'd fit the jam around it after the one side where the hinges are is locked off and level and plumb. Then you'd swing the door and you'd sort of work the jam around it versus putting the jam in, nailing it off on all four sides or three sides, and then swinging the door. Mm-hmm. And if somebody said to me, hey, man, that's the way I do it, I'd go, well, you're fucking high.
Right.
That's not the way to do it. You're wrong. You do it this way because you can set your margins all the way around the door if it's loose. If you lock off the side where the knob's going to hit before you swing the door, you may have a quarter inch at the top and a eighth inch at the bottom or whatever. Your reveals are going to be bad, as they call it. Now, in carpentry, there's a ton of stuff you do if you're cutting laminate with a skill saw. You put the good side down so it doesn't chip out because that's the way the blade turns. And just there's a whole bunch of shit. And if anyone ever argues with you, you'd go, oh, you don't fucking know what you're doing. You're not a carpenter.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. And I wish that worked in comedy. I really fucking wish that worked because it is just as cut and dried, except for it's in outer space. It's just in the ether. Nobody, there's no rules. There's no anything.
Yeah.
All there is you get enough juice to tell people to shut the fuck up. That's about it. That's the only rule.
And sometimes the people that get enough juice.
But I've had people fucking make lame arguments with me 1,000 times in comedy. And it's like, you're not even an apprentice. Why is your fucking opinion so valid? And if we were on a job site, you wouldn't even be allowed to talk.
Yes, but how do you explain this? There are a fair amount of comedians out there, or filmmakers, or actors, who are really, they are not, I do believe in sort of, you know, I believe my aesthetics are accurate. And there's a lot of people out there who have talent and people who don't. I believe this is just the way it is.
Sure.
But there are people out there who become very successful who I think suck.
Yeah.
And how
name
do you...
Name a few of them.
Name a few?
Lemmy. Horrible cinematographer.
You know...
What directors aren't that funny?
Oh... You know...
I talk about people I think suck all the time.
You do?
Yes, I did 20 minutes. I do about 20 minutes on Tyler Perry and what a fucking hack that guy is all the time.
Yeah,
and,
but that's easy.
That's easy.
That's
all
easy.
Right. Oh, okay. He's horrible. But, you know, but when his movies open at $35 million every time they open with almost no advertising, it's totally insane. But, all right, give me some, you know, Kate Hudson.
That's a good example of somebody who's not a very good actress, actually.
Right, who gets to do comedy.
She gets to do stuff. She's got
comedy.
Maybe sort of a flighty thing.
Yes,
you know,
I was also I do. Now, this may not be something that you like, but I think John Waters sucks. I think he's a bad writer. I think his movies aren't funny at all.
Yeah, but, see, I think John Waters did something really good back in the time when he did it, which was the Pink Flamingos era. And then when he went to make these other kinds
the
of
next
movies,
28 movies were not fun.
The Crybaby and all that stuff. I don't like too much either.
Who sucks? That's out there now. They're bigger guys who suck, right?
There are bigger.
Yeah.
Well, listen. I mean, there's the Michael Bays of the world, right?
But Michael Bay just does what Michael Bay does.
So
I mean,
what?
But isn't it sort of like saying McDonald's sucks?
McDonald's does suck.
I know, but there's room for it in our society. I guess what I'm saying.
But that's what I mean. These things work. So on some level, it's a different kind of talent, but it's kind of talent. I'm not saying Michael Bay doesn't have a certain kind of talent. I just say he's not really a good film director.
Hold on. Did he do The Rock?
Yeah. No, he didn't do The Rock. He didn't do The Rock. He did Armageddon.
I was just close to leaping across the sofa and choking you.
Armageddon, Transformers 1, Transformers 2. You know, I mean, it's, you know, he's...
Listen,
and it's an easy one for me to pick out because everybody picks him out. I admittedly am a little scared at this point because there's other people who I think, who I actually even know some of them, who I think suck.
Give me someone in the comedy department that's not up to snuff. You don't have to say suck.
A comedian?
No, a comedic director, writer, what have you.
Well, listen, there's all these, like, Dennis Dugan type guys who you probably don't even know. But
I do know the name, yes.
All these guys that do these big Jim Carrey movies.
Yeah.
And those guys, one after the other, I mean, they aren't really talented in and of themselves. And one of the reasons why they become so successful, and I'm just using that name because there's a whole bunch of them. I'm using him as a type.
I know.
Who they get where they do because Jim Carrey comes in and he's the boss on that movie set. He's the one who is in charge of everything. And they're guys who are willing to not really direct. All right, I'll go with you on M. Night.
M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night. I mean, listen, Sixth Sense is a great movie.
Right.
And then something happened to the guy and every movie after that has gotten worse and worse and worse.
They should all be called Who Stole My Brain.
Yeah, and it's you know.
Yes.
But my favorite is, my least favorite M. Night movie is probably The Sixth Sense, where the shocking ending is that the aliens will be harmed by water and wood. So these are aliens.
Wait, that's not The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense. Sorry. What's the name of Signs?
Signs. That movie's horrible.
So what happens in that movie? What happens in that movie is that we have aliens who are so intelligent they can create spaceships to travel, you know, millions and millions of light miles. They probably have sensors so they can sense but we have a planet that's composed primarily of H2O, and they aren't smart enough to say, "Hey, let's wear a spaceship when we go down. Let's wear a spacesuit when we go down to this planet."
I have gone nuts on this Signs movie 10 times for a few reasons. A, the first one you cite, which is from outer space, our planet looks like a fucking koi pond. So if you're allergic to water.
Right. It's like us flying up to the moon and say, I don't know if we can really breathe out here, but let's check it out and try it and just walk out there hang out for an evening.
Like us just flying to the sun going,
exactly.
I'm going to bring a windbreaker.
Yeah.
Like, all right. So not only do they land on this planet that's 70% agua, which is if it burns them like the Wicked Witch of the West, why would they land? They land in the middle of a fucking cornfield, which is probably getting irrigated on a daily basis with one of those big, water birds. So that's number one. Number two, they hold up in like the root cellar, and the root cellar. I'm getting back to my door expertise again. Interior doors are 1 3/8 and exterior doors are thick. They're 1 3/4. An interior door with just a, like, barrel bolt on it or a hasp or whatever, one good fucking boot from just a drunken neighbor and that thing would pop open, you know? They can't figure out how to get the door open to the root cellar. These, you know, it's like jiggle, 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 jiggle.
What is
jiggle,
like, jiggle, jiggle. What is like kryptonite to them?
They can't get through it. And then of course, the guy who was going to play a little, Joaquin Phoenix was going to play a little AAA ball back in the day, just takes out the entire fucking colony with a Louisville slugger, and it's game over.
Yeah.
So it goes from, these things have powers beyond your wildest imaginations and superhuman strength to, oh yeah, they're gone.
Yeah.
Oh,
they're dissolved by water.
Dissolved. Yeah. I'll tell you, I'm not mad at M. Night. And then he always inserts himself into those movies.
Yeah. And he's such
a
great
actor.
Which
is like, he's in the middle of rural Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Like he's a Petridge Farm guy. And he's down at the country store and stuff. It's always weird to see that guy in the middle of his own movies.
Yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock would just fucking walk through his movies.
Yeah.
He didn't give himself lines. But I'm mad at the people who told me that movie was good.
That's exactly.
There's a bunch of fucking people are like, oh, hey, ho, ha.
That
ooh,
movie got
ha,
great
ooh.
Reviews,
it
too.
It did.
People are fucking idiots. That's
it
what
sucked.
I get so mad about. People are
angry at
idiots. And it's like so hard. I mean, it just makes me so angry.
I would like to take all the people. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to do one of those movies like from the 20s or the 30s. It wouldn't be a movie. I would recreate it. It'd be me on an island. And it'd be a whole bunch of people sitting across a very long dinner table on a huge mansion at an island, like, you know, with a seas bang crashing up against the rocks and a lightning storm out there, and they'd all be sitting around. They wouldn't know each other. And they'd be like, why are we here? I don't know you. Did you get your invitation? I got my invitation. I'll be at a huge long table. And then at some point, I would come walking in from around the corner in a crushed velvet blazer with a brandy snifter, and I'd be carrying a Persian cat. And they'd all be looking at me. Who are you? Is that the guy from the man show? What are we doing here? And I'd say, the reason I've asked you all here is half of you told me signs were good. And the other half said the gods must be crazy were good. And now you're all slowly going to be killed on this island. And there'd be a lightning crash right there, and the lights would flicker on and off. Good luck. Good Godspeed to all of you as you slowly perish on the island. I'm going to take a sip from my brandy snifter and again laugh. I'd lean back and laugh again with my Persian cat.
Yeah, I know.
Because all the people told me the gods must be crazy and signs. Those are the two movies that were out for like a month before I finally, you haven't seen
it. I saw Signs right away. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen. And then, you know, every one of his, I mean, all his movies are pretty stupid.
Well, now they're all.
Listen, also, even this, I mean, listen, there's things I like about the superhuman one, Unbreakable or whatever?
I heard that was all right.
But there's things I don't like about it, too. The shock ending of that one is that because, you know, there's a guy in it who's Samuel Jackson who's completely breakable. It's really easy to break him. He shatters at anything. So then he surmises, because he's so breakable, then there must be a guy out there who's unbreakable.
Sure.
It only follows. He spends his life searching for the unbreakable guy, and is Bruce Willis, who for some reason is unbreakable his whole life but doesn't notice he has superpowers
until he's
Willis age of 67.
Yeah. I did, and again, I like the one with Ron Howard's girl in it.
The Village?
Now, here's the thing. I like the premise of it. And I like sort of the twist on it that you thought it took place 150 years ago, but it was modern, whatever. But again, just had that at the end. Like it was like one of those, like I was with it. I was with it. I was hanging with it. The overall premise is fine. Like, it's an interesting premise that you think this movie's a period piece, but it turns out it's a modern whatever. There's like no.
I gave up by that time, so I quit seeing after Signs. I'm like, I can't deal with
this. The Village had good premise, good build, good everything, and then somewhere about the 2/3 or 3/4 mark, right when movies like that are supposed to sort of zenith, you know, it sort of went let's wrap it up.
So the other great thing about M. Night is how he brags about his movie. Like, when the last one came out and got terrible reviews, and everybody hated it because everybody's on to him now.
Right.
He goes about how future generations will understand that this is one of the greatest movies ever made.
He means his own kids.
Yeah.
When he says future generations will embrace it, he means
you know M. Night's grandkids are going to be bored when he sets them down.
Family.
And, yeah. Well, makes them watch those movies.
He gets them enough hard candy, maybe they'll clap at the end. All right. I want to thank James Gunn for coming in here. Human Z can be found at jamesgunn.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, James, always a pleasure. Dig your vibe, buddy. And come back anytime.
Thanks, man.
So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for James Gunn saying mahalo.
Follow Adam Carolla on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Reach him via Skype at Adam Podcast or through the mail at Adam Carolla Podcast, 10061 Riverside Drive, number 276, Toluca Lake, California, 91602. That's the run, do it again.
It's Paul Bryan.
And Christy.
Go to AdamCarolla.com to buy tickets now for a funny, fun, and most of all, tax-deductible night to benefit me and my fight against cancer. Christy, what's the event called?
Last for Bald Bryan.
And where can they go for tickets?
AdamCarolla.com.
And when is it?
November 20th.
That's pretty much it, folks.
What about where?
They don't need to know where.
It's at the Wilshire Bell Theater.
There you go again, stepping all over me. All right, AdamCarolla.com for tickets. Thanks, peeps.